You just tuned in to Set for Success with your host, Richard Lannan. But hey, you knew that already because you listened to the intro. And thank you for that. We're going to continue our journey to help you create a roadmap to change your business, your career life. I'm going to do this through what? Chatting with one person at a time to uncover people's lives, their business, their journey, their successes to help you create the success that you deserve. And you do deserve to be successful. Now, listen, I want you to say that right now. I deserve to be successful. You do. Everybody does. So if you tune into the show on a regular basis, you know I love quotes. I'm always looking for different quotes to work into the show. So here's today's Set for Success quote. Nothing in this world can take place of persistence. Talent will not. Nothing is more common than unsuccessful men with talent. Genius will not. Unrewarded genius is almost like a proverb. Education will not. The world is full of educated derelicts. Persistence and determination alone are omnipotent. Now, that was by Calvin Coolidge. Now, if you don't know who Calvin Coolidge was, he was the American politician and lawyer who served as the 30th president of the United States from 1923 to 1929. He gained a reputation as a small government conservative. Coolidge restored public confidence in the White House after scandals in his predecessor's administration and left office with considerable popularity. He embodied the spirit of the middle class, could interpret their longings and express their opinions. He was praised by advocates of smaller government beliefs. So it was a very interesting president. And I don't know if you know much about how parties or political parties change over time. And the show is not about politics. But over time, whether you're a conservative party or Democratic type party or liberal or whatever, your views usually change. And I think Coolidge at the time really represented a segment of the population and had some definite thoughts on that. I recall a time as a young man as I was wondering what my next move would be. And as faith would have it, I found myself in a church listening to a pastor speak on the importance of perseverance and determination to build a person's success. Now, this was not a normal activity for me. I just happened to be walking by and I decided to walk in. Just by the fact that I do business strategic planning, training, and coaching, and host a radio show and a podcast, I've met a lot of people in their careers. And those people are gracious in their sharing of their journey with me. Often they come from all walks of life, from the wrong side of the tracks, the less than studious person who is rich, to the well-educated yet poor person. It amazes me what kind of stories I actually hear from people. Interesting, there is often a common story that binds them together. It has something to do with persistence and determination to be the best or do their best with a sense of purpose and insight. They have not always had the best guidance either, coming from either working families where money only came into the house if everybody worked. And I mean everybody worked. There were hard lessons learned that got applied in their business, career, and life, propelling their need to succeed or to be successful moving forward. There was an inner drive and often no time to question who they are and why they were here. And that's a question we use a lot today. Who are you and why are you here? A true working person's ethic is to put food on the table, clothes on the back, and a roof over their head. And I've always have liked the working man's or working woman's ethic stories. I mean, the ones where they had nothing or came from nothing or something, they often risked it all many times to create success. So this is what we're going to do today. Oh, by the way, they normally do with persistence and perseverance and determination. So here's what we're going to do today. As I gave today's show some thought, I wondered who could share their business and life journey with us, someone prolific in their own right and young. I wanted to hang out with somebody who was young and did not fit the normal millennium definition by Western society today. And as luck would have it, Stefan Arneau was available to come and chat with me. Now, Stefan is an award-winning real estate investor, entrepreneur, author of multiple books, and winner of the 2014 Rich Dad International Hall of Fame Award. Stefan, welcome to the show today.
Thanks for having me again, Richard. It's always a pleasure.
Stefan, I always enjoy hanging out with you, and I think where we can start is just sort of getting the listeners a little bit familiar with who you are. And so could you tell them a little backstory of your life?
Yeah, well, I've written a little autobiography called Self-Made, and the book starts with, I want to be a rock star. So, you know, I had that emotion when I was younger, when I was 15, 16 years old, I wanted to be a rich, famous rock star. And of course, you know, I say to my parents, hey, mom and dad, I want to be a rich, famous rock star. They say it's a horrible idea. And my mother said, well, why don't you go to university and get a music degree? Because rock stars should have that, which is totally false. But I went to the University of Manitoba. I started studying music. I was a professional musician for a bit. I had a rock band. I was a cool guy for a bit. You know, I would say I used to be cool. And what ended up happening with going to the school, you know, go to school and get a good job, as most people say to the young kids, I ended up with a major in English and a minor in music, and I was broke and I was unemployed. I had no money. I still wanted to be rich and famous, so I got into real estate and real estate investing, and became a self-made millionaire before 30. And I guess, you know, I've been on the show two times with you?
I think two times before. You've come on, we've talked a little bit about your background, your history, yeah.
Yeah, so we talk about real estate, or we talk about negotiating or something. Today, you know, I'm here for a different reason. We're talking about hard times create strong men, my new book, which is about men and masculinity, which ties into why don't you have any money?
Yeah.
Because you have daddy issues. And a whole different thing. So, you know, I could talk for hours about me, but you know, I think it's really more important to talk about what's good for the listeners, right?
Yeah, no, I agree 100%. And I think basically we just want to set it up a little bit to give our listeners an opportunity to get to know a little bit about you. Mm-hmm. You have written, we just have a few more minutes before we're just going to pause the break and we'll start talking a little bit about Hard Times Create Strong Men. But you have written a number of other books. What were the other titles that you've written?
So I've written a book called Money People Deal. It's now 20,000 units sold in Canada, which is 3,000 is a bestseller right here. Self-Made, which is all about how to become a self-made millionaire. I've written 10 Commandments of Negotiation. That's something that I've done a lot of over the years, street negotiation. The last one's called The Close, 7-Level Selling, all about sales. And then this new book is Hard Times Create Strong Men.
Yeah, and I think what we'll do is we'll come back and we'll talk about what started you writing this book, Hard Times Create All Men. This is Richard Lanford, Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hello, welcome back. I'm hanging out with Stefan Arnio, and we're talking a little bit about his new book that is, selling off shelves? How many copies have you sold already?
So this book, Hard Times Create Strong Men, is supposed to come out April 1st, yes. And I got a little test run of 2,500 copies, and we're already sold out. And so we got like a month and a half till launch still. And I got no books right now. So if you order it, you're going to have to wait a little bit. I've got a semi-truck or two semi-trucks of paper coming of just this book. So it's crazy. It's just flying off the shelves. Never happened to me before. And Richard, most books sell but less than 100 units.
Yeah.
So this book's hot. Even J.K. Rowling, the number one author in the world who wrote Harry Potter, she wrote a book under a ghostwritten name and only sold 500. So, you know, 2,500 books is a big deal a start.
Selling books is in itself a pretty big challenge, especially in our marketplace, right? And you're selling what, internationally or North American wide?
We sell globally, man. Yeah, I wake up in the morning, I see orders from Sweden, Belgium, Africa, places in Asia. Like, there's places I don't even know where they are that are ordering my stuff. So it's super crazy. And the shipping, international shipping, can get kind of crazy.
You get crazy too. So let's just sort of step back a little bit, and I'm going to ask the question in such a way, where did this book come from? In other words, what was the emphasis? What started you thinking about this book before you actually started penning it and going from there?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
So I came out of the jungle. I just came off a 40-day water fast in the jungle. Like right now, I just came back. Mm-hmm. I usually write a book or two in the jungle. Last year, I did an 18-day water fast in the jungle, and I came home and my employees were having a mutiny. There's like 8 or 9 employees at the time. I'm an entrepreneur. I own a couple businesses. And my employees, my young 20-year-old, 22-year-old, 23-year-old boys in the office, boys or men, whichever you want to say, were having a mutiny. They said, I don't like you. You're mean. I don't want to do this. This isn't my dream. And you know, I'm switching this like feminine voice because those are a bunch of feminine complaints coming from a bunch of masculine men who should be doing their jobs. And I had to give them the how to be a man talk for 6 hours over 2 days. And then I said, why am I doing this? Why am I giving these boys a how to be a man talk? I'm not their father. Then I realized they don't have dads. So I went home and I started typing out my thoughts. 11 days later, we got 151,000 words in a book called Hard Times Create Strong Men, which is what does it mean to be a man in money, sex, religion, and politics? It's a man Bible for these boys who don't have dads.
Okay. And that's where it came from.
That's where it came from.
Because I read that chapter and I was going through it. And having been a person that I've started companies, I've run companies, I've had employees, I've also worked for other companies, had employees. And I found that some of it, very straight up, very direct and to the point. It's almost at times like the stuff that you know that happens, the stuff that you know that needs to be said, but you also know in some organizations you can't say it.
Well, you can't say it anything and anywhere. I came back this year from a 4-day water fast. I was gone for 90 days out of my business, and I had another mutiny this year. And people started throwing the government book at me, and this is what you can say, this is what you can't say. I said, listen, my company's Disney, and if you don't like Disney, you go to Warner Brothers across the street. And I said, that's the message from Disney. I'm Walt Disney over here. And if you don't like it, get off my ship.
Okay.
And the government rules are so tight, and the political correctness is such a poison today. You can't even say, like, you know, Richard, your hair could be on fire, and I could say, Richard, your hair is on fire, and someone said, well, that's offensive. You can't tell Richard his hair is on fire. Well, what do you mean? He's burning to death. Can we please help him? Can we pour some water? No, it's offensive. What? This world is now crazy. The men are wearing lipstick and dresses. The women are becoming butch and breeding German shepherds for fun. And we have a negative birth rate in this society, and we're going into major decline because we've got so screwed up and the men have become weak.
So to me, it sounds like this is a really controversial book.
Oh, bro, this is a powder keg. I was afraid of this book for 6 months. I was like, is this going to ruin my brand? Am I going to be a racist, sexist, homophobe, Islamophobe, blah, 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 blah? And the answer is, I'm none of the above, but we live in a world where men can't even point out that there's a problem. Like, hey, this is broken. Hey, why is there a guy in the girl's bathroom? That's weird. Like, yeah. let's just say that's weird, dude. You got an 11-year-old daughter, and there's like a 45-year-old deranged man next to her in the bathroom, and you can't go in? That's weird. So there's some weird stuff going on, man. And like, to call a spade these days is evil. And in a land of liars and criminals, telling the truth is criminal and a lie.
So that's pretty messed up.
It's pretty, dude, it's super messed up.
Yeah. One of the things I did want to mention is that this book is not for the weak of heart. I think we should cover this straight up front because you even mentioned on there, I think you call it an R-rated book.
Yeah, it says rated R for relevant. And it says this book handles issues for turning weak men into strong men by fixing their broken ideas with women, sex, money, politics, and religion. So it's rated R. It also says on the front, warning, if you're easily offended, do not read this book, burn it instead. And also as a parental advisory, because there is swears, nudity, violence, but it's all stuff you'd see in the movies on Friday night, which you go to every Friday.
Yeah, well,
so it's
you watch
no big
it on
deal.
Netflix, I mean, you know, or some other organization.
Well, you're addicted to it. I mean, human beings are addicted to violence and sex, but we don't like to say we are. It's super weird.
No, it is a little weird. I did want to bring that point up because I had the opportunity. I haven't read the whole book yet, and I will read it.
You're going to love it.
Yeah,
and
I've been
it,
enjoying, there's certain chapters I've been enjoying more than others, right? But I might find them a little offensive, right?
Well, it might rub you, man, but if you're getting rubbed the wrong way, or if you're getting offended, that's where you got to question your premises.
Sure.
Right? And that's the beautiful thing, is we're opening discussions. And you know, women actually like this book more than men because they go, holy crap, this is why this guy is with me for 8 years and won't marry me. Or they go, holy crap, you know, guys read this and they go, this is why I've been living with my girlfriend for 6 years and won't marry her. It's because there's some weird masculine issues messed up. And it fixes problems.
So, you know what? That's a good spot to go to because you actually write a chapter around on selecting a woman. And I think there might be an offsetting one on women selecting men, but I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But I found that absolutely fascinating. And it was referenced to a YouTube video. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about that sort of model and that and why that's in the book.
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been a young man, and I haven't really had a great dad myself. My dad, you know, he's a father. I mean, he's a guy who buys me a sandwich every week. Like, I go see him, he have a sandwich. As far as being a mentor, he's not there. So, you know, my parents gave me some advice, and I went out trying to find a girl, a wife, whatever. I'd love to be married, man. I'm 32, and I'd love to be married. I've been engaged before, but finding a woman nowadays is super hard. And being a man, guess what? We look at the wrong things. Wink, wink, Richard. When we're selecting women, we look at their looks, or look at whatever. We don't look at what we actually need. So this is like the dad advice that your dad would give you in the garage away from your sister. He wouldn't say this to his daughter, but he'll say it to his son because he has to know the truth about, you know, selecting a good woman and some of these other things. And I can't say I'm an expert in selecting women. I selected a whole bunch of messed up women because I've been messed up for years. Not as messed up now, but I mean, there's a lot of issues in here, man, and we get real and raw with it.
So what we should do, we'll take a short break and we'll come back and get your thoughts on what you need to do to select a woman.
This is Let's do it.
We'll be right
back.
Let's
do it.
Hello. Welcome back. I'm hanging out with Stefan Arneo. We were just talking a bit about his book. You know, just before the break, we said, you know, I wanted to, well, I basically said it this way. I wanted to get your ideas on the one, two, or three things for selecting the woman that you should be involved in your life. Because you dedicated a chapter, and actually, you dedicated a whole section in your book called Sex, Women, Children, and Family. And I'm just picking out one chapter, chapter 15. So what would you say is part of the selection process, I guess?
So I'm going to open with Richard. I've been a womanizer in the past. I am not married. I'm not an expert on relationships by any stretch of the imagination, but what Hard Times this book is, it's history.
Yes.
So a lot of it's history, statistics, what works, what doesn't. And so people always ask me, why are you qualified to talk about women? Why are you qualified? You're single, blah, 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 right? That's the snap judgment when they see what the book's about. But hey, it's history and statistics. So usually, you know, a couple of things are really important. One is men and women are complementary reciprocals. They're opposites.
Sure.
Typically, 80% of men and women are opposites,
successful,
masculine and feminine.
You know, it's interesting you would say that. And I know you're going to jump into a few things, but as I was coming into the studio today to meet with you, I was thinking about that. And
yeah.
I was thinking that you play to your strengths and you partner with your weakness.
Exactly. Right? And that's you know, 80% of couples are masculine man, feminine woman. And that's what you do. It's your traditional gender roles.
Yeah, that's
then
statistically.
Then 10% are gender neutral couples where they're kind of equals, and then 10% are the gender reversal where the woman's the powerhouse and the man is like baking cookies at home. So, you know, first of all, you got to figure out who are you and what's your complementary reciprocal? What's your opposite? I think that's pretty important, or what matches your masculine feminine energy, because really it's about energy and it's about balancing that. And then there's values. What do you value? How you've been raised and upbringing. You know, one thing that I wrote in the book is I notice people always create normal, but normal is not normal, right? You know, some people, there's a book called The Five Love Languages, where I joke and I say some people have the sixth love language, which is beatings and abuse, and they want to be abused and beaten, and that sounds messed up to say.
No, it's totally messed up.
But it's totally messed up, but that's what they respect and they like. So
it's interesting you would use the five love languages, because one of the things, I'm one of those people, I've been in a long-term relationship.
Yeah.
So I have insight from another perspective. I've been involved with the same person with 32 years.
Good for you.
And so, yeah, thank you.
Some clapping.
But when I read the stuff that you mentioned in your book, and this is why I wanted to bring this chapter up, I read it from the perspective of having been in a long-term relationship.
Yeah.
And a lot of the stuff I have to say is bang on, you know.
Well, the whole book's bang on, man. That's why you printed it.
But anyway, you were saying about, basically, as I went in there, we were talking a little bit about the love languages. And then the other one, you said there should be a six because there is a dark side to relationships.
Oh, it's totally messed up. And you know what I've realized, Richard, after my fast this year, my 40-day water fast in the jungle, I didn't eat anything for 40 days. I realized all of my relationships have gone wrong in business or personal have been my shadow with their shadow hooking up.
Okay.
And so it's my negative shadow. What's my shadow attracting my own shadow? And it's a messed up thing where it's not even, you know, I went out with a girl in the fall and she was everything I wanted. I had a list of 25 things I wanted. This girl was everything I wanted and she was a complete disaster. And I realized maybe this is God telling me I shouldn't have what I think I want and I should get something else. And it was a really interesting moment because we get in all these lists and we get in these ideas of what we think we want. And I remember I used to want to be a professional jazz musician at one point. That's the most retarded idea ever. Stupidest idea you could have, to be a professional jazz musician in the year 2000 something. But we get confused sometimes. And I think what's going on in our society right now with Hard Times is a lot of people are just straight up confused. You know, there's guys wearing dresses and they probably don't even like wearing dresses, but they're confused and someone told them that they should do that or it's okay.
Or they're pursuing careers, which are businesses that they think they should pursue.
Yeah.
And we can flip that around too in other ways, right? Guys and women. I mean, I'm going to balance it out here where we go and we pursue things that we think we should pursue when we shouldn't be pursuing them.
Right. And stuff just gets in our brain. Like, you know, I told myself when I was younger, I want to be a billionaire. And now I go, do I really want to be a billionaire? I mean, I'm pretty freaking wealthy compared to the average person, but what do you do with $1 billion? The answer is nothing. Like you literally do nothing with it. Probably just make more stuff, but I like making stuff, so who knows?
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question though in itself, and I know it's not part of this book, but if you follow media and you follow what's happening, one of the questions that's being asked, is it necessary to have billionaires in our society? And it's a huge question. And should there be a cap on what people can earn? Should billionaires, if you are a billionaire, should you contribute back more to society?
Well,
because you have way more than you need. You'll never be able to spend.
You know what? This is like playing right in the politics section of the book. And what's happening right now, what's happened in our Western society is our society is a Judeo-Christian value system with a capitalist background. And right now what's happened is we have, with the virtue of the universities, we have an atheist communist philosophy being superimposed on that other value system. So what's happening is you've got a clash of two completely different value systems.
Ideologies.
Yeah, ideologies. And in the United States, in the economics universities, the number one book right now is Das Kapital by Karl Marx, which is a failure of economics. But like, this is how messed up the world is.
It's
like,
amazing that that book is the number one.
Dude, it's totally messed.
I read it in economics back in 1984.
And it was a failure back then.
Well,
it's still a failure
but
now.
But you had to read it. It was one of the necessary readings so that you could do a comparative analysis on capitalism versus socialism versus communism.
Right.
Economically.
Well, and the thing with that is, I mean, people, let's talk about the billionaire thing. Yeah, I guess you can go take all the billionaire's stuff, or you can loot him, or you can tax him. But at the end of the day, what happens to guys like that is they just say, screw it, I'm going to go to the forest and just not even work now. And then everybody's naked and rolling around in the mud for 10,000 years. You got the Dark Ages for 1,000 years all of a sudden. Because that was a big recession. People just, you know, the philosophy got messed up. The barbarians burned the libraries. And I predict in this book, hard times create strong men. History goes like this. Hard times create strong men. Strong men create good times. Good times create weak men. Weak men create hard times. And I predict that we are going to have a barbarian-style thing where we might go backwards for a bit here. Who knows?
All right. All right. Could you repeat that, actually? Because I thought that was really cool.
Listen to this.
No, I want you to repeat it right now.
So the book is based on the premise. This is cycles of history. Hard times create strong men.
Yep.
Strong men create good times.
Yep.
Good times create weak men, and weak men create hard times. And that's an 80-year cycle of history. And right now, we are at the end of an 80-year cycle of World War II. So World War II is 80 years ago, which means World War whatever is coming next. Now, 80 years before that was the American Civil War. So in the book, I predict between 2020 and 2026, we're going to have either a major war or American Civil War.
Yeah, major meltdown.
Because all we have in history is four generations that repeat over and over again, and it's the hard times create strong men generation. Strong men create good times. Good times create weak men generation. Weak men create hard times. So the millennials, although we're babies, I'm a millennial, we're babies, we're going to be the hard times generation that goes through the hard times.
When we come back, I think what we can do is we can talk a little bit more about the hard times to come and how it relates or what you speak in your book. This is Rich Land for Set for Success. We'll be right back. Hey, welcome back. I'm hanging out with Stefan Arnio, and we're talking a bit about his book. Listen, just before the break, we were talking a bit about the cycles, right?
Right.
The 80-year cycles that happen, and you deal with this in your book, and particularly you were talking about the millennium, and you being part of the millennium generation, you know, I thought that that was really something we should cue into, because I think often we miss the fact that there's like four generations right now that exist, right? The traditionalists, the boomers, the Gen X. I'm Gen X, the worst generation of all.
Are actually pretty good. The boomers are the bad ones.
I'm thinking about attitude, right?
Bad boy attitude. You have like the left little earring on.
You got an earring, ride a motorcycle.
You drink Pepsi instead of Coke because you're so cool. Like, yeah, I get it. You guys are like, think you're rebels and stuff.
Those kind of things.
Yeah.
Always fun to mess a joke around. But listen, what do you think the impact is going to be, or what's going to happen with the millennium generation based on just talking about the four seasons per se, you know, the 80-year cycle?
Well, here's what's going to happen. In 2020, 2021 around, there's going to be a big event. I don't know what it is. I think it could be a petrodollar collapse. It could be, I mean, there's a lot of geopolitics and crazy stuff.
One of the things they're talking about right now is if the Russia and China align
make their own currency.
The oil and gas and create their own currency, then
it's
that
over.
Will be the deflation. The US will be done in a second.
So there's some major problems that can happen
in
2020.
There's big global stuff going on right now.
And so I'm a finance guy, and I look at the financials of what's going on, and I just know that in 2020, we're going to have some problems. So the millennials, my generation, we're going to go through some very hard times. Now, I don't know what's going to cause it. I don't know if it's going to be a civil war. It could be civil in the United States. They look like they could have a civil war right now, left and right fighting. And it could be a World War III. Who knows? But the cycle is coming to an end. And there's also another cycle, Richard. 2026 is the 250-year birthday of the United States. And I don't know if you know this, but democracy only lasts for 250 years and then turns to tyranny. So in 2026, you might have Emperor Trump instead of President Trump. And that's what happened in Rome. You know, Julius Caesar became the emperor instead of the Senate, you know, was no longer in power. Hmm. So there's a lot of historical cycles that are ending between 2020 and 2026. The millennials will be cast into something very hard and will be galvanized. I mean, the millennials are called the hero generation, actually. We're the same as the World War II generation, but they were pretty weak until they went through a depression and a World War II. So they became, you know, very hard. And that's that's something, you know, when hard times come, that's when men become men and women become women, and the genders split again, and they go to their polar opposites. When times are good, they become the same. So we're in this good time right now, and we're ready to split back into masculine and feminine because survival's on the line.
Yeah, it's interesting you would say that, because I often talk about survive, strive, and thrive, and I go with the three. And I think it's when you're in survival mode or survive, that's when you really learn what it is to be you, right?
Yeah.
That's when you really, that's when it's push comes, all the old expressions come out, push comes to shove, you know.
Respect the grind, which I say.
Yeah, which you say, right? All of those things actually happen. That's an interesting view of historical events and what is about to happen. And you're not the only person talking about this, okay?
No, man.
There's lots of authors and writers. It is polarized right now.
I was freaked out, Richard. I was freaked out because I wrote this in 11 days in isolation. And then I looked at my manuscript. And then I found out about a little guy named Jordan Peterson. And he was saying the exact same stuff as me. And he's the biggest best-selling book right now. And he's doing a huge tour as a huge moon. I'm going, oh my God, this Jordan Peterson guy's saying the exact same stuff as me, and I don't even know who he is. So a lot of people are feeling these thoughts. They're feeling that the men are weak. And when the men become weak, Richard, what happens is the culture collapses, the society collapses. Like right now, none of the men have fathers. So the fathers are gone. They're all in jail. They're divorced. You know, the women's movement has gone too far. The feminism's gone too far. All these things have gone too far. And we no longer have men. So we have a bunch of men acting as teenage girls, and you have a bunch of women acting as men. And guess what? The women don't play as good as the men. LeBron James in the NBA makes $120 million. The number one WNBA, I think she makes 60 or 70 grand. So they can't even compete.
Yeah.
And in the U.S. Navy SEALs, there's 0% women. So, you know, when it comes down to survival mode and guns and killing and all these things, the women don't play. It's men on men usually. And you look at sports, nobody wants to watch girls basketball with a smaller ball and a lower hoop. They want to watch the biggest, tallest guys dunk over each other and not the little girls, you know, with the smaller ball and lower hoop. Real life doesn't have girls basketball.
Making those kind of statements in today's society is extremely controversial.
Oh, yeah. People are like, oh, my God, he's a racist, sexist, misogynist, homophobic. I'm like, what are you talking about? No. People don't want to watch this. Look, here's the numbers. The girls make 70 grand, top player.
Yeah.
The men's is 120 million because they want to watch LeBron be LeBron.
Mm-hmm. And I think partly maybe even just goes back to audience, too. I mean, who wants to listen to what or who wants to watch what? I don't know. I'm just sort of throwing that out there.
Well, just ticket sales, bro. I mean, like, you can say whatever you want, but at the end of the day, the cold hard cash tells you what's going on.
It tells you lots of things are going on. There's just so many areas in this book that we can actually talk about, and I think you've hit on lots of them. If somebody wanted to talk to you about your book or connect with you on this topic, how would they get in touch with you?
So they can get the book at hardtimesstrongmen.com. That's hardtimesstrongmen.com. And they can go pick up a copy, connect with me on social media if you want, but hardtimesstrongmen.com is where you get the book.
So I got a couple of questions for you. Out of curiosity, what is something in your life today or something in the future that you want to achieve? What is something that you're out a step on to actually achieve at this point?
Well, that's a really strange question for me because right now my business is in hyper growth
and
I'm just promoting this Hard Times book and I'm just rolling with it as long as it can go. I said to myself, if I have to be on the road for 5 years promoting Hard Times, I'll do it. If I'm on the road for 10 years, I'm going to promote this message until the wheels fall off because I think the men really need it. The women really need it. Everybody needs this Hard Times message right now. So I'm just out promoting this as much as I can. And, you know, I think it might even turn into a training program, Richard.
Based on your background, I would suspect it would.
Yeah, I don't want to train men and women to be men and women. But that's a legit need right now.
But you're sort of just rebirthing a movement that happened in the 80s. I mean, there was a whole movement.
It was also in the 50s. They used to have finishing schools for women and men's schools for men. And they used to train the men and the women separately. And you had great men and great women. And now they bungle everybody up in the middle and nobody knows what to do. Yeah. Nobody even knows how to cook dinner anymore. My God, you have to order a box of HelloFresh in the mail. People don't even know how to cook or sew or make a scarf or anything, make bread. I mean, just like... we're living in this crazy time where nobody knows how to do anything.
I know. And that in itself is dangerous.
Super dangerous. Super dangerous. Oh, my God. If we had a war and you didn't know how to do anything, you'd be dead.
You'd be dead. No doubt. You know, and it's interesting. You always make me think, okay?
So well, here I love you too, man.
Yeah. No, but really, you know, and I was coming into the studio today, and I was thinking, you know, I was thinking about my childhood. And I'm one of those generations that I grew up in a small town. And you know what? You learned to fish. You learned to hunt. You learned to trap. You hung out with your uncles and aunts. You hung out with your cousins.
Right.
You know, and you just had this sort of, you knew how to do stuff, yeah. Right? You just knew that if you needed to pick a tool up, you could use it.
Right.
And I do find that when spending time with my youngest boy's generation, they don't know how to do stuff.
Right.
You know, and that does concern me.
And this is it. You know, the baby boomers raised my generation, the millennials. And when you got helicopter mom, I wanted to shoot guns. I wanted to do karate. I wanted to go hunt and fish. I loved the Boy Scouts. Somehow I was taken out of that. And my mom tried to raise me as a girl. She gave me dance and art and musical theater. We weren't allowed shops. We weren't allowed wood class. We weren't allowed hitting and hockey. So, you know, my mother, bless her heart, she loves me. You know, I love her too.
Of course.
She tried to raise me as a girl because she grew up with, I guess, masculine men. And she said, well, I don't want my boy to be like these hockey players or whatever she says. And next thing you know, she's trying to raise me as a girl. And that just messed me up, man, because I'm a man. I'm wearing fur. I want to go shoot some guns. That's something I want to do. I want to go knife fighting. I want to go do boxing because men, we need that stuff.
We like to do stuff. Listen, if you could eliminate something, what would it be?
Feminism.
Really?
It has to go. Well, here's the thing, Richard. I mean, we can talk about communism, capitalism. Communism doesn't work, and feminism comes from communism. It's a derivative of communism. And right now, one of the big things I talk about in the book is feminism is destroying the women, and it in turn destroys the men. Well, it actually wrecks the whole cycle of things. And we talk about cultural subversion, and actually feminism, the whole movement, is a KGB plant from Russia during the Cold War. So when you read about where it comes from, you go, oh my God, well, that's some screwed up stuff. And yeah. Women, you know, women, when they talk about feminism, they don't even know what they're saying half the time because they haven't really thought it through. And, I mean, we can do a whole nother show on why feminism has to go. It just has to go, has to leave. I'm not saying you can't be a powerful woman. You can be empowered. You can be a woman, whatever. That's all good. And compete with the men. But feminism is just a broken animal, completely broken. It has nothing to do with human nature, and it has to go.
Well, with that thought in mind, we're starting to run out of time.
I know, and everyone's
that's
saying
heated. That's heated. Right?
Yeah, and they're saying he's a misogynist. I'm like, no, I'm not. I love women. Yeah. Like, do your thing. It's awesome, but that's a broken animal.
That's a broken animal. Okay, so listen, we got to get ready to go. If you had a final thought for our listeners, what would it be?
Get hard times, create strong men at hardtimesstrongmen.com. And you know what? Some of you guys at home are probably rubbed by the wrong way, and you're freaking out about this, or maybe I offended you. If I did, get the book, burn it. If you don't like it, send it back to me. Send me a video. I'll even send you your money back. Hardtimesstrongmen.com.
There you go. Listen, thanks, Stefan, for joining me. I often always have fun whether you're on the show with me or even when we just sort of cross paths and have a dialogue. For our listeners, listen, thank you for hanging out with me today. I really appreciate it. If you have a thought, a question, idea, do send me an email at richard@setforsuccess.ca. And I want you to remember something, to do your best, invest in the success of others, and make your journey count.